Minutes of the last meeting?
Madam Chairman, I move for the adoption of the minutes of the previous meeting.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none? All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any nays? Okay. Today we're going to talk about sustainable and some organic issues. We'd welcome Jim Bordening. Is he here? Okay.
Madam Chair, I'm Paul Burns, Assistant Director of the Ag Resources Management and Development Division of the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Normally, you would be hearing from either Jim Borboom or the manager of the program, Dr. Mary Hanks, but Dr. Hanks is out on medical leave right now. So I've actually been involved with the program longer than anyone else at the department anyway. Back in 1985, the Department of Agriculture first got into the Sustainable Agriculture Program through an Exxon Oil Overcharge grant that we received back in, starting in, I believe it was 1985. And then in 1989, the Sustainable Agriculture Program was placed in statute as part of the Groundwater Act. And for reference, it is in Chapter 17.114, which is the general sustainable agriculture statute, and the low interest loan program is in Chapter 17.115, and the grants are in 17.116. This program investigates and demonstrates sustainable agriculture practices and farming systems in partnership with farmers and others, and provides financial and technical assistance to encourage those practices and innovation to create new practices. Sustainable agriculture practices are those that are resource conserving, conserving soil, energy, water, capital. They protect the environment, enhance profitability, and support the farmer, the farm family, and the community. Some examples of the kinds of practices that we've been involved in would include livestock on managed pasture, hogs in deep bedded systems, cover crops seeded into standing corner beans, diversified crop rotations in farms, energy crops, vegetables, fruit, livestock, row crops, small grains, legumes, and etc. Value-added practices, which include on-farm processing, cheese making, livestock on the farm, specialty markets, and identity-preserved activities. We also have been involved in direct marketing, farmers markets, marketing cooperatives, sales to educational institutions, food co-ops and restaurants. We've also been involved in energy reductions, composting, integrated pest management, reliance on livestock manure and energy. Within the overall program, we provide on-farm research and demonstration grant program, and if you look at the document on your table, this is the green book that we've been publishing for a number of years, and it's very widely distributed and frequently requested. And if you turn to page 6, there's an overview of the Sustainable Ag Grant Program, where we go out and working with producers and researchers demonstrate new practices on working farms. We also have a low-interest loan program to help transition into some of these practices, and that's profiled on page 58 of this green book. We also have been involved in managed grazing technical assistance. We actually work on a cooperative agreement with the USDA to help write grazing plans. And we have a comprehensive organic program, and Meg Moynihan will get into that in just a moment. We have, in addition to the Green Book, we also have a number of other publications, Poultry Your Way, Dairy Your Way, an Organic Farms Directory. Here's just a copy of the cover and a title page for Dairy Your Way. We've also got Poultry Your Way, Hogs Your Way, a number of productions like that. And we've also recently been working on cover crop research and demonstration. And a complementary program to sustainable agriculture is the Integrated Pest Management and Biocontrol Program, which is also profiled on page 53 of the Green Book. We partner with numerous organizations to coordinate activities and share resources. The grazing technical assistance, as I mentioned, is funded 50-50 by the department and the Minnesota Natural Resource Conservation Service. Most of our publications are done in cooperation with the University of Minnesota's Institute for Sustainable Agriculture or other departments at the university. Cover crop research is in a cooperative effort with farmers, local and federal agencies, and university researchers. The research on economics of organic farming is a joint effort with the University of Minnesota Center for Farm Financial Management, the USDA Risk Management Agency, the Minnesota Farmers Union, the Sustainable Farming Association of Minnesota, the Organic Crop Improvement Association, and others. So as you can see, the whole sustainable agriculture program is predicated on working with producers to identify solutions that work with them, working with the University of Minnesota and others to validate and document the benefits of the practices that we develop, and then demonstrate them on working farms. And with that, I'd finish up and either try to answer any questions or turn it over to Ms. Moynihan.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Schmansky.
I would just have one question on the Minnesota organic farms. Is every farm that's certified organic listed in this booklet here, or is just the ones that are registered with your department?
Madam Chair, Representative Schmansky, I'll let Ms. Moynihan answer that question.
Madam Chair and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to talk with you. I'm Meg Moynihan, for the record. I serve as the Organic and Diversification Specialist at the Department of Agriculture. And Madam Chair and Representative Schmansky, that book does not contain every farm. We asked farms if they wish to be listed. That's the first ever. And we did not want to list anybody without permission or without the details of the operation. So that represents about half of the farms in Minnesota.
Madam Chair.
Representative Schmansky.
Thank you, Ms. Moynihan.
Ms. Moynihan.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to be here and just wanted to add a bit of information to that which Mr. Burns shared with you about the Sustainable Agriculture Program, particularly in the area of organic. Wanted to give you a brief update and some examples of ways that the Department of Agriculture is supporting this emerging and burgeoning sector of agriculture. We have a new legislative report that I believe was just delivered to you in person or to your offices by our Legislative Affairs Director, Quinn Cheney. So I did not bring copies of that for you today. It has far more detail than I'm able to share with you in these brief few minutes, but I'll try to hit the highlights. Basically, we are finding that organic is a value-added diversification strategy that many farmers in Minnesota are curious about, and quite a number of them are adopting. Not a good fit for every farm in the state, but certainly a specialized kind of agriculture that works for many of them. We are very diverse in our operations. We range from 10-acre certified farms that might be serving the Twin Cities with fruits and vegetables to farms that are as big as 3,000 acres up in the Red River Valley. Some of those areas that are cash grain farms. And if you look at a picture of the state of Minnesota, the type of farms, organic farms, are just what you'd see in terms of conventional farms in those agro-ecoregions of the state. We have some farms that raise their crops and livestock 100% organic, and we also have some that are what we call split operations. Part of them are organic and part of them are conventional. They segregate the product on their farms and market those separately. They use a variety of sales and marketing strategies. Some sell direct, some sell to brokers, some export directly. They really run the gamut there. And speaking of marketing, the market is very strong. And these growers are responding to cues in the marketplace. The Economic Research Service and some of the industry groups tell us that in the past decade, organic sales have been growing at better than 20% a year. So this is something that's really, we're finding that consumers have an affinity for. We're finding it's not a flash in the pan. It's not a fad. It's something that's consistently growing. And I certainly see at my supermarkets, and I imagine you may at yours, if you're the primary shopper in your households, that the organic sections at our grocery stores across the state are expanding, getting larger. While organic in general has been growing at 20%, meat, fish, and poultry are growing and are projected to grow even more strongly, and so is dairy. And that's really something of interest, I think, for us in Minnesota and our dairy sector. Organic production practices are governed by federal law and federal standards. They are not something that are made up out of thin air. There are specific requirements for farms and also for organic processing, because organic food, after it leaves the farm, has to be processed in certified organic conditions and handled that way to maintain its organic status and its promise to the customer that this is an organic item. Our farmers in this state were early adopters of organic. We currently have, according to the Economic Research Service, 433 certified organic farms in this state. Our own numbers at the Department of Agriculture are a little higher. We're estimating that we have between 500 and 535 certified organic farms in this state, and that puts us about number 5 in the nation. In terms of acreage, we're number 4 for cropland, and we're number 6 for total organic acreage. Some of the larger western states and Alaska have surpassed us in some of the rangeland that they've been able to certify organic. But we really are up toward the top in terms of what we grow here, and our farmers on the leading edge of that and some of our associated industry. And we are number 1 producer of organic corn and soybeans in the nation in terms of acres. We're top 5 in a number of other crops, including buckwheat, oats, rye, flax, sunflowers, and hay. And for livestock, we're number 7 in dairy cows, or we were in 2007, and that was up from 9th place, and number 6 in broilers here in the state. We, at the Department of Agriculture, I promised I'd tell you a few of the ways that we're working to support the sector, and I have 4 to tell you about. One is some regulatory relief for the cost of certification. Certified organic farmers must be certified by an agency that has been accredited by the USDA. This is a regulated claim in the marketplace, and they pay a cost for that. We found in the last organic farmers survey we did and some of the data that have come in that in 2005 it was about $900 that the average farm paid for certification. We have a state organic certification cost share program that provides some regulatory relief, and that's 2/3 of their costs capped at $200. Response to that program has been very strong. About 50% of the farmers participate in that. For the last few years, we've had some federal funds that augmented our state money and made it a more generous program to the farmers. But it's something that is very well received, and the producers certainly tell us that they like that. $35,000 is available and appropriated for us for that, and an additional $15,000 for administration and our organic advisory task force. We also hold each year a Minnesota Organic Conference. To my knowledge, we're the only state Department of Agriculture that coordinates an organic conference in the United States. That's done by my division. We were up 100 registrations this year to about 425 people attending. That takes place in St. Cloud in January. And we have nationally known speakers. We have breakout sessions, workshops. People of all shapes, sizes, genders, age groups come to this organic conference, and it's a very lively place for the exchange of information. We find that organic farmers really like, they prefer to learn from one another. If you say, where do you like to get your information? They say, we like to talk to other farmers and find out what's working or not working on their farms. So this is a wonderful forum for that to happen. I also have 2 examples of targeted projects that we're doing with some outside funds that have come from the USDA to the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. One is the Directory of Minnesota Organic Farms that Representative Szymanski asked about. That was a special item in our last organic farmer survey. We asked whether they would find a directory helpful, and 90% of them said, yes, we would. So we did this directory. We think it will be useful to farmers, but also to buyers who will be able to find producers. We've organized it by county, so that farmers can find each other and local buyers can find local sources of things, and also by the type of crop or livestock that's produced. Those have been flying off the shelves. We've already reprinted that. The second project is one to which Mr. Burns referred. That's an organic farm business management program project. We find that there are many people that want proof about organic, that say, you know, organic needs to prove itself. We hear that yields are lower in organic. We hear that profits are higher. We hear that profits are lower. We hear that labor is more. We hear that input costs are very different. And we don't have consistently collected real-world data about this right now. So we entered into a partnership with the Center for Farm Financial Management at the University of Minnesota through its Farm Business Management Program. And those of you from farming communities might be familiar with this program. It helps farmers with respect to their own goals for their farms measure what's happening on that farm. And we found that organic farmers were very underrepresented in that pool of producers. The Risk Management Agency has provided some grant funding, and we're offering scholarships for organic farmers to participate. Last year, we had about 60 enrolled in the program, and that data will be available to the farmers and to the public, anonymous data, certainly all privacy protected, but that information will be available a little later this spring, and it will be fascinating to find out what's really going on in the real world setting of some of these organic farms. I do want to mention before I close that our state is known for a very high degree of collaboration in organic agriculture. Many of our institutions and agencies have limited resources, limited staff people, and we've been very good at pooling those, working in partnerships with the universities, some of the nonprofit organizations, the USDA, the state, and we are the first state in the nation that has a multi-agency memorandum of understanding on organic agriculture. And the signatories for that were the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, the University of Minnesota Extension Service, the University of Minnesota College of Agriculture, whose name recently changed, so I would give you a hybrid if I did that, but I think you know what I mean, the Farm Service Agency of the USDA, and also the USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service. That's something that we are hearing that other states are interested in emulating, and so are certainly pleased about that. As I said, the legislative report that we prepared for you certainly has lots more detail and information. I am always available to answer any questions that you or your staff have, and would be happy to answer questions now if you'd like, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Moynihan. Are there questions, comments? Representative Heidrichen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In regards to organic, I know I've been out in a few pasture walks this last year. out in Polk County, it's gotten to be, the results have been just phenomenal, especially in regards to the wildlife. I was out to Dan Jenigas, but he got 8 different pastures that he uses each year. He rotates them. And the wildlife, and it was something to see. Wherever the animals were, that's where the pheasants and the ducks, et cetera, were. The other properties that were just coming off CRP or RIM, we walked them, there weren't any birds or any wildlife at all. It was nice to see that correlation. At the same time, has there been any movement to try to get the state of Minnesota allowance for these livestock farmers to be able to fence some of the CRP and RIM properties and to be able to do it, not overly grazed, but limited basically feeding for these animals, because we have found that all of the results have shown that the pastures are better, the CRP lands are better if they're a little bit cropped than not at all. Any idea on that in regards to that?
Madam Chair, Representative Heidrichen, I can take a stab at that. There have been specialized discussions, especially during drought times, at looking at using RIM and possibly even CRP land for haying and grazing, and there have been special dispensations for specific drought conditions, and that's been an ongoing discussion for any of the land retirement programs for many years, and of course there's a lot of different perspectives on how and when that maybe should happen. And I think that the new interest in cellulosic biomass production is probably going to accelerate those discussions. But Specifically to your question, right now, those discussions have been limited to specialized conditions during drought.
Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this isn't necessarily your bailiwick, but I'm going to ask you about it anyway. And it's one of the questions I will have for the marketing division, the Minnesota Grown folks. You know, it's like ethanol, you know, unless you have a market for it and have people buying it, you never see the industry grow. And we did that in this case by a 10% ethanol mandate, and we continue to try and discover ways to increase that market in Minnesota and other places. Almost every grocery store in Minnesota now is interesting thing happened in Wilmer. Cub Foods is, or Cub Walmart is coming with the Super Walmart store. So as everyone watches that building being built, Cub Foods and Cashwise or Coburn's or the other folks in town are rapidly putting in gas pumps and liquor stores and totally redoing their health food and organic food section within the store. And one of the things I don't see in Minnesota supermarkets is Minnesota-grown displays or Minnesota-grown organic displays. There's all kinds of organic food. From what I can tell, as we put out the report of Minnesota-grown folks, and we identify them as organic folks, but what are we doing to get actual sections of Minnesota-grown and or Minnesota-grown organic foods? Are you thinking about that or working with marketing on that? Because I'm going to ask them that when they're looking at their budgets this year. And I think it's something we need to do. I, as a Minnesota resident, am willing to pay more. I'll pay an extra quarter or dime or whatever it is for a pork chop if I know it's organically grown Minnesota pork. I'll do that. I know it comes from my neighbor down the road, as opposed to buying an organic pork chop from Nebraska or somewhere else. So how are we doing that? We have a very good, I think, captive audience here. How are we marketing within our own supermarkets, other than our specialty stores that are seeking it out themselves? Are you working with Minnesota Grown on that, or is that something we need to continue to talk about?
Ms. Moynihan.
Madam Chair, Representative Junkie, I will have to, in large part, I'll have to defer to my colleagues in the marketing division. I can tell you that they are going to be working on a Minnesota-grown organic identity within the Minnesota-grown program. It's my understanding that the governor's budget contains some funds for that. And also that there are organic farms that are noted specially in the Minnesota Grown Directory. As far as your question specifically about organic and natural foods, Minnesota organic natural foods and their profile in Minnesota retail establishments, that's something I'll have to defer to them on. I understand that the state of Michigan has had some very good luck with that, and perhaps that's something we could help you research if you're interested in that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so I'd ask this committee and the folks in the audience to start putting on their thinking caps, because that's something I'm interested in. And I think we all are as a body here. How do we better market our it's a wonderful label. They've done a great job developing it, and now it's just kind of sat there stagnant for a number of years. And we need to really, I think, get that Minnesota Grown label out and advertise it so people know it's a quality label, it's products grown here, safe foods grown in Minnesota by Minnesota growers. You know that. We know that. How do we get the rest of the folks to start knowing that and marketing that? So thank you.
Are there any other questions? Representative Szymanski.
Madam Chair, let me address a question regarding the retail sales of organic produce in the, as Representative Junkie alluded to, the Walmart and the Cub and so forth. Do we have a compliance or a spot check system in place to determine if what is being sold at retail as organic, can we spot check that produce and determine is it actually organic, wherever it is produced?
Ms. Moynihan?
Madam Chair, Representative Szymanski, I'd have to check with my colleagues in the Dairy and Food Inspection Division who have responsibility for grocery store checks. I have visited with their inspectors and helped them learn about organic requirements, organic labeling, and the kind of paper trails and documentation that come with organic food. It would be very difficult to pick up an apple, for example, and do a chemical test and ascertain whether or not it were organic, because apples travel around, they bump into things. However, that apple would come with a pedigree that we could check and trace back to the farm on which the apple was grown. When there is a need for that, that can happen. Some retailers choose and elect to be certified themselves, and in that case, their certifying agent would do some of that spot checking. In terms of whether that is a standard practice that our inspectors at the department do, my answer there is I don't know. I certainly could check for you on that.
Representative Szymanski.
Thank you. My concern was that with mass production of organic produce that it will drive down the price such that our Minnesota-grown organic producers may not, have the ensuing profitability that they anticipated when they certified as organic producers. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Representative Heidrichen?
Madam Chair, just a general comment to Representative Junkie. I have to let him know that I'm always offended, or not really offended, but I always have an issue with Walmart. But it isn't just Walmart. You can come over to Charlie's Cafe over at Freeport. It's probably the only restaurant that serves organic milk between here and Fargo. We have it there. I mean, it's not just the Walmarts of the world, but it's the little businesses that have stepped to the plate, too, that are trying to help some of the organic industry get a start. But anyways, with that, I know there's, you had mentioned that there's some governor's initiative. I know Commissioner Hugesson was here and mentioned the possibility of some incentives like we have with the 85 for the retailers. Is there any way I can find out what some of the incentives are for the organic, if it's, say, for example, for my business, if I wanted to check into it, what are some of the incentives available? I know he mentioned it in his opening comments here to in your committee, I think, Representative Junkie.
Madam Chair, Representative Heidgerken, I'm not sure I exactly follow, or incentives for organic
retail
production
or retail.
Or retail.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we're not familiar with what incentives there are out there for retail outlets for carrying organics, but we can look into that and get back to you.
I think in some cases there are slots for in grocery stores, especially chain stores, and it's hard to get into the slots, and I think that's one of the problems, but it's certainly something that we need to work on. Representative Erdahl?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like to point out that in my district we do have an organic retail outlet, and it'd be interesting to know how many of those there are around the state. And also, and that's in Cocado, by the way. Also, since I will be going to Charlie's Cafe in Freeport on Friday, I do plan on sampling that organic milk, and was wondering if Representative Heidgerken had any organic ice cream.
Representative Junkie?
Well, again, just to follow up again, and I didn't say I was promoting the Walmart store, Representative Heidgerken. I said it's coming, and I have nothing to do with it. But I do think it would give our local Super Values, Cub Foods, Colburn's, and others a great way to compete with the Walmart. And I agree with the slotting. We need to work on that. But when you go down into Cashwise Foods in Wilmerdale and you look down the aisle, you'll see labels sticking out that say fat-free, or it'll say low-carb. I mean, they're directing you into the spots and the slots. Mm-hmm. Probably not, and that's a selling point in general, not necessarily for a product. And there's no reason not to have little Minnesota-grown sticking out on the honey shelf, where we have honey grown in Wilmer, Minnesota, sitting on the shelf at Cub Foods, but no one would know that. unless they actually picked it up and studied the label. So, I mean, I think there are some things we can do to promote Minnesota Grown within our larger supermarket change, which then will make people want to go there rather than Walmart, Representative Heigerken, I think.
Thank you. I appreciate your information and coming. It was very informative.
Thanks.
Madam Chair, committee, thank you very much for your time.
Helen Murray.
Good afternoon. Thanks for the opportunity to be here. My name is Helene Murray, and I'm the director of the Minnesota Institute for Sustainable Agriculture. MISA is a program that's housed at the St. Paul campus of the University of Minnesota, but we're not just a university program. We're a partnership between five nonprofit groups, the Minnesota Project, Minnesota Food Association, the Sustainable Farming Association of Minnesota, the Land Stewardship Project, and the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy. And within the university, our partners are the College of Food, Agricultural, and Natural Resource Sciences. And then in 2006, we also added the University of Minnesota Extension as a partner in our endeavors. We work together to bring the diverse interests of the agricultural community with interests from across the university community in a cooperative effort to develop and promote sustainable agriculture in Minnesota and beyond. Minnesota is a diverse state, and the University of Minnesota provides research, education, and outreach programs for farmers of many different types and sizes. At MISA, we conduct educational and outreach activities, including farmer roundtables, field days, workshops, and interested in alternative and crop and livestock systems. In 1997 and 98, the legislature provided us funding to work on the Alternative Swine Production Systems Program via the Ag State Special to develop alternative housing operations for research and outreach in swine systems. The program is located at the West Central Research and Outreach Center in Morris, and we conduct outreach there on research on hoop houses and alternative housing, pasture and farrowing and finishing systems, and a Swedish deep-style bedded farrowing and group nursery systems. Funding at that time was also provided to hire an alternative swine researcher to be housed at Morris, and Dr. Rebecca Morrison served in that position for several years. She went back to her native country, Australia, but we have continued to do work with her from there, so we have those good connections. Dr. Eugene Lee was hired a couple of years ago to fill that position, and she focuses on animal behavior research in the gestation hoop houses. These systems are proving to be farm worker friendly as well as environmentally sound, and those benefits are being documented. Dr. Lee is a native of China, but she's also done work in Japan and Canada, and so we have those good international connections as well. In 2005, MISA expanded all our alternative swine systems program to include all livestock, including dairy and poultry. And as your previous speakers mentioned, the two publications, Dairy Your Way and Poultry Your Way, as a way to get information out to farmers. We do these things collectively. We maintain a website that receives an average of 48,000 visits a month. And we publish a sustainable agriculture newsletter and an alternative swine system newsletter. And we also provide information in a variety of formats so that it's not just available electronically, recognizing that many farmers don't have access to the high-speed internet that folks in the Twin Cities do. In addition to those, the work with livestock at the Elwell Agroecology Farm located at the Southwest Research and Outreach Center in Lamberton, we have 120-acre certified organic where we do research on crops, and there's an additional 25 acres in the process of being certified. At the Southern Research and Outreach Center in Waseca, there are 13 acres of certified organic land, and the research there done is focused on feed for alternative swine and dairy programs. In 1998, we published the organic certification of crops in Minnesota, and we've just updated it. It's at the printers right now, but to help provide farmers with information about how to transition using the national organic standards. On the St. Paul campus, this summer we'll be in the third year of the student organic farm. It's about 1.3 acres. They are going through the process of having it certified. They grow vegetables and flowers and sell them at the Minneapolis Farmers Market during the summer and then through office deliveries on the St. Paul campus. And they were just recently received an award from the Minnesota State Horticultural Society for their work. So we're very excited about that. There's also a dairy program at the West Central Research and Outreach Center in Morris, and designed to serve the information needs of moderate-sized dairy farms with a focus on the role of grazing in sustainable agriculture systems and evaluation of forages for lactating dairy cows. And they are exploring the possibility of becoming certified organic, but are don't quite have that done yet, but they continue to look for those things. Earlier, one of the representatives was talking about how do we get information out about local food systems. About a year ago, we published this book, Local Food, Where to Find It and How to Buy It. It's targeted toward consumers so that they can know how to access products from local farmers. We printed 4,000 of those. They quickly gave them away, and we printed another 4,000. So that's been a widely received publication, and we're quite pleased with it. On the heels of that, we put out a publication that's just in the process of also being printed, and it's a marketing local food marketing designed for producers to help them better know how to get to consumers locally. So I appreciate the opportunity to present to you all today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Thank you, Ms. Murray.
Thank you.
The State Organic Advisory Task Force. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Today, my name is Tom Peterson, and today I'm testifying before you as the chair of the State Organic Advisory Task Force to give you a brief overview of the committee and some of the activities we've done in the past year. And I'm handing out the enabling legislation for the task force, which the main charge is created in statute is to advise the Commissioner of Agriculture in Minnesota on the policies and practices to improve organic agriculture. The task force meets about four times a year, and we try to move around locations. We build in tours that are very helpful sometimes. In the past year, we've had meetings at Lund's and Byerly's and looked at their organic sections and their stores. We've toured the Jouse's Dairy Farm, who will be testifying later, in Sibley County. We toured Lamberton and U of M, and these are helpful a lot of times to see the practices in place. The task force provides an excellent opportunity, as Ms. Moynihan said, also for information sharing. She mentioned the Memorandum of Understanding, but on the task force, you can see I also included for you the members of the task force, and you can see that I think it's great because we have the USDA, Minnesota Department of Ag, U of M. We have a lot of businesses that have a lot of issues with organics in Minnesota, farmers, and we also have a consumer rep on the task force, which I think is really important. And in my interest in organics too, and I serve on the task force as a representative of not-for-profit farm organizations, and I'm kind of like a lot of the farmers. And how I got into the task force myself was I didn't know that much about organics, and I still have a ton to learn. But what I noticed in my job was that a lot of farmers more and more are transitioning to organics or interested in transitioning to organics or looking at that as an option. And we see things like the Wedge Co-op in Minneapolis having 11,000 members. And Representative Verdahl mentioned in his district, this summer I got to tour a co-op with Representative Morrow in St. Peter. We have farmers in Todd County that raise pasture chickens and dairy farmers in just about all your districts. And so the need's there to try to facilitate a lot of these different issues. The commissioner is in attendance at many of our meetings, and at least we always have an assistant or a deputy also is at our committee, and the commissioner tries to take in the tours and everything too. Among some of the recommendations or things that we've done in the past years, we help the make recommendations to the commissioner on legislative priorities, being this is a budget year, and Mr. Riddle is going to go over some of those priorities for 2007, some of which you see in the governor's bill and some you'll see in other bills carried by members of this committee. We also have advise the commissioner on farm bill priorities. The commissioner gets asked a lot to write different advisory positions on the upcoming 2007 federal farm bill. And so our committee has advised him on several things on that. We advised the commissioner on this past year on proposed rules, USDA rules on pasture. Ms. Moynihan referenced that there's specific guidelines for what's the standard of organic rule. And currently on pasture, the law says that they should have access to pasture. Well, that's kind of wide open. And I'd note that our Commissioner of Agriculture did submit comments after our committee recommended it. And to my knowledge, he's the only commissioner and the only Department of Agriculture that did that in the United States. We also made recommendations on a proposed pipeline that's going through much of Minnesota on what the organic impacts of that pipeline would be and what mitigation should look like for organic farms. We helped make recommendations for the successful organic conference. And marketing, Representative Junkie mentioned, is probably one of the more controversial things that we talk about in our committee. So I was pleased to hear you say that, because that is probably one of the biggest items, because how the farmers are marketing and their ideas for that. And finally, I'd mention my pet project is the state ag statistics book that maybe many of you have seen. It's a glossy colored item that the state puts out every year. It does not have the word organic mentioned in it once anywhere, and even in passing. And so I've been on a personal mission, and our committee has recommended that we try to get that worked in there, and the commissioner has told me that he will work on that. So that's just a quick overview of some of the things we work on. And I'd also note, too, in closing, that I think, too, because a lot of work we've done, North Dakota and Wisconsin now have organic advisory task forces also. So thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments from the members? Representative Heidrichen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Peterson, good seeing you again, but I do have an issue with C, create a pool of funds to support organic farmers using contributions from retailers. And the reason I say that is that the cost, just to me as a retailer, for having organic milk in my restaurant, it's considerably higher for me to buy. So I'm already making that contribution. You know what I'm saying? And that's something to be wary of. If you want the restaurants and other places to do that, I can have milk in there, you know, just regular milk, a lot cheaper, pay a lot less than what I'm paying for the organic. But that's something to keep in mind. But the other piece that's missing again, and I think that's something that we need to get everybody behind on, in order for us to get the organic farmers really up and running, is to give them access, as I mentioned before, to those properties that are already organic. You got some of these lands that have been in CRP or even U.S. Fish and Wildlife or RIM or any of those areas. These pasture lands where they've been sitting there for 10 years, there has not been any pesticides or anything put on those properties. The organic farmer could use it tomorrow, right now, and expand their production of livestock. And it would definitely help the dairies. And I've seen a report earlier where the only studies ever done in organic dairies, and in a couple states, and none of them show where the organic dairies are making money. It's a real struggle for them. But it's something that I think this is a piece that, at least if you look at the handout in the states, Stearns County's number one in organic farming, which encompasses my district. But it's an issue with them. And it's something that I think we can really step to the table if we'd get some of the farm organizations say, let's get this done for these guys so they can use these properties and they'd be organic right now and they could expand their production.
Madam Chair, Representative Heidrichen and Mr. Riddle talk about the legislative priorities, and he maybe could comment on the first part when he goes through those. Real quickly on the CRP thing, is that something that we have, if you remember those that you were here on the CREP discussions we had 2 years ago, that was one of our legislative priorities, as it was for many, was to be able to use that land for grazing. And in general, there's some caveats and everything, but land coming out of CRP is eligible for transition to organic, and that's why a lot of producers look at that, and we do encourage that because of the things that we've said is good. So, thank you.
Any other questions? Mr. Riddle?
Yes. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jim Riddle from Winona, and it's truly an honor to appear before you today. I've been involved in the organic sector for over 25 years as a producer, inspector, trainer, author, outreach coordinator, and avid eater. I recently completed a five-year term on the USDA's National Organic Standards Board and served as chair of that board during my final year. I currently work half-time as the University of Minnesota's organic outreach coordinator and distributed a brochure about our organic ecology program to you, but I'm appearing here today on my own behalf and not on behalf of the university, but instead as a member of the Department of Agriculture's Organic Advisory Task Force, where I've served since 1991. And served as chair since 1995 until last year when Tom Peterson thankfully took over. Before I begin my remarks, I must say a few words about the Minnesota Department of Agriculture. MDA has been very supportive of organic agriculture, working creatively with minimal funds to provide high-quality information to producers and promote this economically and environmentally sound system of agriculture. And I speak at a lot of organic farming conferences all around the country, and the Minnesota Organic Conference that was up in St. Cloud a few weeks ago is the only one where the State Department of Agriculture organizes the public conference, and it's just really puts MDA in a position of national leadership and really serving a public good. And the other programs that Meg Moynihan discussed, the Farm Business Management Scholarships, they've done organic agriculture training for ag professionals, and have really stepped up to the plate and are a national leader in state departments of agriculture, and they just deserve your full support and appreciation. And I'd like to focus my remarks on the recommendations that the Organic Advisory Task Force submitted to the department in anticipation of this legislative session. First, we wanted to make sure and continue the base funding for the Ag Resources Management and Development funding and the work of the Sustainable Ag and Integrated Pest Management Programs at MDA, where the organic program is housed. So to protect what we have, number one priority for the task force. But going beyond that, as was mentioned earlier, Minnesota has had an organic certification cost share program since 1998. We were the first state in the country to enact this program to provide some regulatory relief to organic producers who do pay for that annual inspection and certification. And since that time, there has been a federal program adopting the exact same concepts, only paying at a higher rate. The Minnesota program has paid two-thirds of the cost, up to $200 per farm per year. The federal program has paid 75%, up to $500. But the federal program was underfunded, and the funding was there for a few years, and then it wasn't there anymore, and so we went back to the state program. So farmers that have participated in this have basically gotten jerked around, where one year they've qualified for up to $500, the next year it's back down to $200, and they don't know just what the rules of the game are. And even with the $200 program, it's been on a first-come, first-served basis. So some farmers who qualify, just like their neighbor, have gotten their paperwork in a little later and haven't gotten anything. So it's a very popular program that puts money directly back in the pockets of farmers. And I understand that a bill is being introduced by Representative Doty to provide for $160,000 per year for this organic certification cost share program. And I encourage that matches up with the task force recommendations. And also, we need to revise the state eligibility requirements so that they match up with the federal requirements, so that it pays 75% up to $500 per operation. And just a side note, I'm also involved in farm bill discussions at the federal level, and the Secretary Johann's farm bill proposals do contain funds and authorizing language for this federal program once again, but that would kick in after 2008. So the legislature has the opportunity now to fill the gap, and then if those federal funds come through, then I would advise you to have language in there that allows the state funds to be used for assistance to help transitioning farmers access the organic market. And that's the recommendations of the task force as well. On the Sustainable Ag Development Grant Program, this also has been a very successful program that Minnesota has led the way nationwide. It allows farmers to do on-farm research, to try new innovations, to take a little risk, but to have some support in doing that, so they're not betting the farm on trying some new practices or equipment or other innovations. And the task force recommended an annual appropriation of $200,000. I understand that a bill has been introduced calling for $250,000. When the task force looked at it, we were looking at the direct money that would go to farmers. We weren't thinking about the administrative costs. When you factor that in, the figure of $250,000 certainly is a reasonable amount. And just to point out on those, you know, besides helping farmers do on-farm research, and typically they work with university researchers or extension agents on that, but they also have to do field days and then submit a report which ends up in the green book, so there's a built-in outreach component as well. And like it was said earlier, farmers really learn best from other farmers, and this is a program that facilitates that information sharing process. Another program that is successful but underfunded is the Minnesota Dairy Initiative, and there's one team in the state which has expertise on organic dairy production, but they're stretched to the max. And we're calling for a doubling of the funding from $55,000 to $110,000, and specifically to provide more expertise within the Dairy Initiative for grazing systems, organic, on-farm processing, and alternative species within that program. We would like to see the dairy business planning grants continue and make those grants available specifically to organic and transitioning farmers. And we endorse the development of a Minnesota-grown organic logo and good promotional materials, as has already been mentioned, to connect that Minnesota-grown identity and the Minnesota-grown organic logo to the consumers at the point of purchase a lot better. We also, you know, think creatively and look at some new programs that might help organic farmers access the market, and getting more organic foods into the school and healthcare agencies is certainly one of our recommendations. We're not calling for specific allocations for that, but it's something that we suggest should be addressed. And helping existing farmers transition to organic, one thing that we have seen, there's a county in Iowa, Woodbury County, that has set up a property tax reimbursement to farmers that transition their land to organic production. We would suggest that the state of Minnesota look at some kind of a pilot program of targeting some property tax relief to counties that want to sign up to be part of a pilot where farmers who convert their land to organic production could qualify for a property tax rebate or reimbursement of some type. Also, we suggest some idea, and we really haven't fleshed this out, of pooling funds from retailers, manufacturers who on the retailer's side do not have to pay the cost of certification. Some voluntarily choose to, but they do not have to pay, but yet they can mark up the organic products and draw in the consumers, and to somehow tap recoup some of that to help more and more farmers transition into organic production. And I'll finish quickly, but a couple more points. Allowing organic food purchases through the WIC program. Minnesota used to allow that. Then it was taken away. We would certainly like to see that reinstated. And then also looking at ways to incorporate more organic agriculture in wellhead protection areas and establishing a loan program through Rural Finance Authority to help existing and brand new beginning organic farmers get access to credit. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Doty?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Riddle, your position at the university with gives you a unique chance, I hope, to answer this. I don't want to put you on the spot. This list of suggestions, recommendations, do you see any expanded role that the university could be doing in these areas since you are right there?
Madam Chair, Representative Doty, these recommendations were specifically from the Organic Advisory Task Force to the Commissioner of Agriculture. But in response to your question, there certainly are a lot of things the university can and is doing to help promote organic production in the state. We just had a meeting of faculty last week, about 25 researchers, extension agents, people from all different divisions within the College of Agriculture. There certainly is a lot of interest. We currently have accessed about $3.2 million in federal research grants for organic research at the university. But the thing that the university lacks is a base funding of dedicated funds within the university system to really drive that organic research agenda. I would say that we've been creative in bringing outside funds within, you know, to the university, to the state, but we need that commitment from the legislature to help establish some base funds for organic research that can be there year to year, and that will help bring in top-notch faculty and then also help generate even more grant dollars from outside being accessed by our university.
As I don't know, most of you know that Doty's bill will be up on Wednesday, and I believe some of the University of Minnesota faculty will be here also. So if you have other questions, we can probably have them answered then. Are there any other questions? Well, I just want to say thank you. There are a number of people in my district that attended the St. Cloud conference, and we're very pleased with it. So thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Falk, you want to repeat your name? And
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Falk, and it's a pleasure to be here to testify for you today. I'm representing LSP, Land Stewardship Project, and CURE. I hold the a board position with CURE at the it's my second term. I was recently elected, so I guess we're moving on with that organization. And I serve on the Land Stewardship Project State Policy Committee. I'd like to give you just a brief history about myself and my farm operation. Our farm has been, I'm the fourth generation on our family farm, and our farm is located just north of Murdoch in Swift County. We have kind of a unique situation there that we established a seed business about 20 years ago, and so we work with farmers every day, and we have a kind of a multi-diverse seed processing operation there where we work with all types of farmers in the conventional, traditional sense, and we work with organic farmers, helping to supply organic seed stocks to those people in the organic community. We also work in conjunction with government programs, and which would be with the RIM programs or the CRP programs, providing native species or different grass seeds to whatever particular government program they're enrolled in. And my reason for talking and being here today would be just in a general sense in support of some of the bills that are coming forward, the Senate file 480 and House file 589. We had a press conference this morning and we had a chance to discuss these bills that are moving forward, as renewable energy is of course the buzz today, and we all know that we're moving forward at a rapid pace. And certainly there is, I think, a common understanding that corn ethanol will not be able to provide everything that we need and keep our market price of corn to the point where we will be competitive. So as we move forward with these new generations of cellulosic ethanol, there is certainly an interest in the long-range plan of getting it right as far as what we can do to protect our environment. And I guess I would just like to comment briefly about the position in the bill there that provides extra incentive for perennial cropping systems. And you know, there's going to need to be open-mindedness on how we set up these systems. There's going to need to be flexibility, but at the end of the day, we still need to accomplish the goals that we're setting out to do, and that is to keep the soil on the ground. We continue to lose through erosion and through major storm events. We continue to lose Minnesota into the Gulf of Mexico. And with that, if we put the right type of cropping systems under some of these highly erodible lands and can utilize them in this type of perennial system for cellulosic ethanol, it's a win-win-win situation, and I don't know how many more wins there are, but we obviously have a lot of potential to do the right thing there. The long-term benefits with this, of course, are protecting our soils and keeping them on the land. In the perennial cropping system, we establish a huge filter system, basically, that is going to have very positive impact on our water quality. And, of course, that is a huge concern for both the organizations that I mentioned that I'm speaking for. We also want to not forget about the economic opportunities and certainly be concerned about our communities. And that's on the forefront in this legislation, to look at what we can do to enhance the opportunities in our communities. Western counties have had a decline in population, and it's no surprise, but energy provides, the new interest in renewable energy provides great opportunities, and I encourage you to consider how much benefit that is when we look at the bills that are coming forward, whether they be this particular bill that's on biofuels or whether it be on wind energy or whatever, that we don't exclude the communities from being at least a dominant player in this renewable energy equation. Not to mention that we will establish more wildlife habitat, and which is a real positive thing, exhibiting our natural resources in a way that that we are protecting our environment. And of course, we have significant carbon reduction as we look at a net carbon loss when we use this permanent vegetative establishment. Obviously, in the conventional cropping system, if we continue to go over this ground many, many, many times, the efficiency in the exchange of energy is in question. And so once again, that's why the perennial cropping system, establishing a native prairie and using it for cellulosic ethanol is very beneficial. So my understanding, and I'm not a technician on the conversions, but I think it's my understanding that it takes a significantly less water to convert the biofuels from the perennials into energy, into ethanol, and also there's other efficiencies as far as what the yield is. So there have been a lot of other testimony about organic, which I won't get into any further than I have. I think that I would like to add one comment about organic, and that is that the people we work with continue to reach out for more ideas, and any type of funding that we can provide to the university or to the Department of Ag that is targeted towards educating and encouraging these people is well worth its dollar value. So please consider that. With that, I would close and try to answer any questions that you might have.
Are there any questions? If not, thank you for your testimony. Today we have up the first bill for consideration is House File 710.
Madam Chair.
Representative Faust.
I move House File 710 to the committee.
We have House File 710 before us. Representative Peterson is chief author of the bill, and he's in another hearing at this time, so Representative Schumper is here to speak on his behalf. You want to talk to the about the bill a little bit?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the Ag Committee. Yes, I will. Just as a way of introduction, I'm Ken Schumper, and I do have a small dairy farm west of La Crescent where I farmed for 30 years. I've also had the pleasure of being a fellow legislator of yours here, and I want to tell you, having spent most of the last 30 years talking to dairy cows every day, it's a lot more interesting being here talking with you all. This bill is to continue the Sustainable Ag Demonstration Grants Program that has existed since about 1988. I was one of the first participants in this project or grant demonstration program. A few years ago, it was funded at about $250,000. It since has decreased. The funding has decreased to about $80,000. And this bill is to reinstate that funding to the original amount or to the amount that existed a few years ago and to allocate some of that money for use as publications of the program and the results that were obtained. As the committee chair indicated, Representative Peterson isn't here. He drafted me a couple hours ago to present this bill today. And I do so very enthusiastically. I participated in it for 3 years. I had one of the first rotational grazing demonstration projects in the state of Minnesota starting in 1989, 90, and 91. And Ms. Moynihan was kind enough to dig up the Green Book reports from those years. And I'm just going to pass those around so you can see kind of what these look like as they apply to my project. Basically, the demonstration projects, you know, I want to clarify it. They're not what you'd call scientific research. They're demonstration projects. They're designed for farmers to demonstrate to other farmers different techniques in terms of sustainable agriculture, lowering your production costs, doing things that are more compatible with preserving environmental quality. And there are basically three components in each demonstration project. There's the actual project itself, where the farmer, in my case, went out and did rotational grazing on my farm, started it, demonstrated the fencing, divided the pastures into paddocks, made some attempts at measuring results. The second component was, in every case, to have farm tours. And these were extremely well attended, certainly on my demonstration project, and I think through all the ones in the state at that time. And then the third component was to publish the results in some respect, and that's what the Green Book is that's being passed around there. Every year, all of the different projects are summarized and the results published in the Green Book. There was tremendous interest and tremendous demand for these Green Book publications, and the farmers who participated, I know from my own experience, we'd get phone calls from people all over the state constantly for a couple months after those came out, people wanting to discuss the results more, getting ideas on how they could do some of these projects on their own farms. This was a tremendous initiative here in Minnesota. It was patterned somewhat after what Wisconsin had done a few years earlier. I literally know dozens of farmers who started rotational grazing based on having come to demonstration projects and farm tours on my farm and on other farms around the state. While these projects were of interest to farmers of all size, you know, they were quite interesting and valuable to smaller producers, people who wanted to reduce their overhead cost and just try to make a living on a smaller size operation. I think we all can agree that farmers are usually quite creative, but they maybe don't possess the public relations skills that other sectors do. And so the Green Book and the involvement of the Department of Agriculture in publicizing these was very helpful. It really just spread like wildfire, the information contained in these demonstration projects. And so I really want to enthusiastically endorse this and encourage all of you to bring the funding level up to what's recommended in the bill. Representative Peterson lined up several other people to testify. If we could do that right now, Madam Chair.
Representative Schumper, if you'd like to come down, maybe all three of you at the same time.
Madam Chair, my name is Bobby King. I work for the Land Stewardship Project. I work in our Minneapolis office. I've worked there for about 2 years. Previous to that, I worked in our office in Lewiston in southeast Minnesota for 4 years. And we also have an office in Montevideo. I'd like to thank the Chair for having these hearings. I think there's a lot of opportunity for farmers, especially beginning farmers, in sustainable and organic agriculture. And I appreciate you giving this segment of agriculture this time. At the Land Stewardship Project, we have a Farm Beginnings program, and we find that this type of sustainable organic agriculture is really appealing to people who want to begin farming, get back on the land with some type of low equity systems. And I think sustainable organic farming is going to be an important piece of getting more farmers back out in the countryside. I just want to say that LSP strongly supports this bill. We believe it allows farmers to be innovators and to be stewards, and that's two things they're good at. And we have a long history at the Land Stewardship Project of promoting on-farm research and farmer-to-farmer education. And you know, farmers see better ways to do things on their farm often, and these grants allow them to pursue that. And then through the Green Book and through field days, it allows farmers to share that experience with other farmers. And farmer-to-farmer education is uniquely effective. Farmers talk to other farmers about their farms and how to change or modify or do things differently in a way that you can't reproduce it in another mode. So this has an important place within within research and within spreading that research. The last thing I want to say before Loretta Jouse is up here, and she's a farmer who can speak to how she's used the Green Book. With the move we're making in our state, or we hope to make, towards cellulosic biofuels from perennial cropping systems, we're going to have a lot of questions about how best to grow those, about how best to harvest those, about how best to establish these pastures, and the type of research on the farm scale that this program allows, I think, could be a really important part of making this happen effectively in the countryside. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. King. Ms. Yowes?
Yes. Madam Chair, Committee, thank you for allowing me to be here today. I am Loretta Jouse, Land Stewardship Project member, organic dairy producer, and also serve as the Midwest leader for Organic Valley's Farm Ambassador Program. My husband, Martin, serves on the Organic Advisory Task Force, and the two of us, along with our son, Kevin, operate a 410 acre 60 cow dairy operation near Gibbon. My objective here today is just to wholeheartedly endorse to restored funding for the sustainable ag development grants in this House File 710, particularly the Green Book, and then also funding for NISA and the Alternative Livestock Program. Quickly, a bit about our history. Martin and I came back to the family farm as the fourth generation in 1990 and immediately set about adapting principles from our biology and wildlife management backgrounds into molding different production methods on the farm. We kind of stumbled that way into organic agriculture, and even at 1990 when we certified the land, we were still stumbling a lot because we had a difficult time trying to find resources. If they were out there, we weren't able to access them. So today the situation is much, much improved. We greatly appreciate the organic field days that the University of Minnesota offers at their Southwest Research and Outreach Center in Lamberton. We try and hit as many of those as we can. The Green Book in particular, as everyone has testified here, if I see research and it's up to me to interpret it and apply it, it's not going to happen. If I can pick up this book and see someone else that has tried something similar and I can call them on the phone, that makes a huge difference for me. So that Green Book has been particularly useful for us in developing a weed control strategy on the farm and kind of restoring an old piece of tired pasture, and then in implementing our new rotational grazing system. So we like the practical nature of it. If some farmer developed it because of a problem he had on his farm, that's good. We think it's good because it broadens the base of organic acreage available for research, in that you've already got certified land. You don't have to buy a piece of land and wait 3 years for it to transition to do the research. The plots on these research studies in the book tend to be of a size that's more realistically represents a real farm operation. So there's a great deal about that we enjoy and appreciate. So though the research has dramatically improved, there's still more. We still have production issues, risk management issues, and certainly rising cost issues, just as a conventional farmer does. But these issues seem to be much less frequently addressed for us organic farmers than they do for the conventional. So we anything we can do to encourage more research in that is good. The other point I want to make here today, we know the farmers need the research, but I do some work in retail education for Organic Valley, and there's some very well-informed, highly intelligent people managing those natural and organic sections in our stores. And they are stunned with the level technical questions that are coming from this consumer base who wants to know where their food comes from, how it's produced, how those production methods are affecting the quality of the food and the environment. So it's the whole organic industry is screaming for this information. And in my view, the person who steps up to answer that scream, which I hope would be the University of Minnesota and the Minnesota Department of Ag, is the one that's going to find themselves in the leadership position in the industry. So my vote again for the U. I have some handouts here that just give some very general information about the farm. Basically, I encourage when you're considering profitability of an operation, we could squeeze really hard and get more pounds of milk out of a cow and multiply that by the number of cows living in the state and consider ourselves profitable. But if that cow is only living 2 to 3 years as opposed to one that's, you know, living 5 or 6 years, those are issues that we need to consider when we're looking at profitability. As far as cost of production on our farm, with the cropping system, we figure it's a wash. Some things are more expensive, some things not. Where we really notice the difference, though, is in the dairy, and that's largely because of pasturing. Once the pasture is established, you aren't out there spending your time and running back and forth on the tractor, so you're saving labor, you're saving fuel costs, and the cows themselves are doing the feeding and the fertilizing and the harvesting. In addition, they're a lot healthier, so we have lower vet costs, and during the pasture season, there really is no food that we supplement for them. We grow everything we have. I have some specific examples of how the pay price works out specifically for us being Organic Valley producers, and I won't take time and go through that. Also, the last page of your handout is a pay price comparison of conventional ag
versus Organic Valley. So I just would quickly sum up the benefits of that information to us. Number one, we are still dairying. Martin and I are convinced that would not be the case if we were conventional. We can afford improvements in the farm that help with our efficiency and profitability and the diversity on the farm, both in terms of the operation itself and the wildlife and environmental benefits. We're organic production helps us build the soil, so it's there for future generations if they want it. And more exciting for us is that we're able to bring our son back into the operation. He's always wanted a farm, so he's just recently moved in to fill his slot as the fifth generation on the Giles farm. And we're able to do that and bring him in and feel good about it because of Organic Valley's commitment to the farmer. We've heard enough, I think, about the impact of organics in Minnesota. I will skip over that. I just want to say that organics is a consumer-driven phenomenon, and someone is going to have to step up and address those needs. And I see Minnesota as being in a wonderful position to do that and hope that we can get funding to support them. So by supporting this House File 710, and again, Madam Chair, thank you so much for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Ms. Jouse. Ms. Jensen?
Hello, my name is Diane Jensen, and while I have the name Project in my name, I'm not with my compatriots here with the Land Stewardship Project. I'm with the Minnesota Project. Our organization is concerned with rural economic development that is consistent with environmental protection. Our programs involve local food, renewable energy, and promoting profitable farms that also protect the environment. I want to thank you, Madam Chair, for having this hearing and folks for listening. Want to speak in support of this bill. An investment in sustainable and organic grants leverages much more than what is invested in the grants. And I will note that the topics of sustainable and organic are timely and urgent, both on the energy side, organics, local. These things are much in demand right now and will only be more so in the future. While the U works on basic research and needs money for that, we also need applied uses because we need both sides in order to get the farmers to actually adopt these practices. And it is the on-farm research that really makes a difference out there. Over the years, I've come before this committee to testify literally on this particular topic, and the last time I was here literally was in 2002, 2003, and I feel like we're fighting over the same couple thousand dollars here and there. And I think there has never been a time when we have needed the money more and should dicker less over exactly the number that's out there. 250 is great. More would be better. But we need to get going because there is a market and an economy being built on this that this only supports and helps. We need the $250,000 per year for the ESAP grants. They make money for farmers, they make money for Minnesota, and they leverage much more money in than the grants that are given out. They are useful and they are needed. We also need the alternative livestock monies for MISA. We need organic certification money in the match, and we need the organic research at the U. Altogether, this is not a large amount of money, and we need to capture it in order to capture these industries. I also support the Minnesota Grown increase to create their additional their logo and identity. I think it's a great project. The Minnesota Project, my organization, works with a number of other organizations, including Food Alliance Midwest and Minnesota Grown, on a new initiative called the Heartland Food Network. Within that, we work to pull local and organic food through the distribution network, both traditional and non-traditional, in order to bring it to restaurants and ultimately schools, nursing homes, and hospitals. What's different about this? Many people have done something like that before. It is that the people who sign on, the restaurants and distributors, are going to measure how much local food they move each year and pledge to do more each year because the demand is out there. The demand from the consumers is out there, and they need to create not only the market on the land to pull the farmers' produce through, but to get that to market through a diverse distribution system. And that do more, that building an industry, we need to amplify and invest in the great work of the ESAP program at MDA and Minnesota Grown and in MISA to meet these demands and make it go. $250,000 is not much to capture those benefits. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak, and I'm open to any questions.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I appreciate much of the work that you're doing. And I think the question for Representative Shumper, are you aware of any opposition to this bill from any group or individuals?
No, I'm not. Not at all. Interviews? No, none.
Keeps it easy, doesn't it? That's it. Thank you.
Why would anyone want to oppose this bill?
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to thank the Giles family for all its information it's given me over time and leading me to support this bill. So I wanted to thank Loretta for coming today.
Thank you. Is there anybody in the audience that wishes to testify?
Madam Chair. If I could just add a couple other points. In the initial round of grants started in 1989, as I recall, I think there were 17 grants made at that time, and they ranged in amounts from $5,000 to $15,000. Mine was $12,000 over 3 years. And, you know, there were for all kinds of different things. And the other part, as you probably noticed in looking through the green books, these grants were always done in cooperation with Extension or with the Land Stewardship Project or university researchers. So it isn't just as if you're giving out $5,000 or $10,000 or $15,000 to a farmer and say, go try something. You know, they were done in consultation. The Extension people helped design the demonstration projects, and it really all worked out very well. And in fact, there's tremendous interest in it. You know, I have registered Brown Swiss, and the Brown Swiss Association became so interested in it that at one time they were seriously thinking of selecting bulls that had live offspring that had short legs on one side so that when they grazed along the hillside they stood level.
Any more discussion? Any amendments? Representative Fowles, would you like to move the...
Madam Chair, I'd like to move passage of House File 710, please.
Madam Chair, I think when you make motions, I'd suggest you recommend or you move it to pass to be referred to finance with the recommendation that it go to ag finance. Be the correct motion so we route it to where we need it next.
So, Representative Junkie, then not back to the finance, but go to you.
No, Madam Chair, you recommend it pass. Go to finance. This is new for everyone in the room. That's why I'm saying it. Referred to finance with a recommendation to finance that they send it to agriculture finance.
So move. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have, for the Vets Affairs Division, House File 533, that will move through to that division. So, any other business? If not, meeting adjourned.